This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. What is a concerto? Most of us know it as a work in which a soloist is pitted against the full orchestra in a sort of dramatic back and forth, sometimes in contrast and sometimes in consort. But the word concerto had a different implication when it was first applied to music at the beginning of the 17th century. In Old Italian, concertare means to bring together. So a concerto was a piece whose individual lines were assembled into a harmonious whole. It wasn't until the early 20th century that the word's original meaning was applied to a new type of musical form, the concerto for orchestra. The first concerto for orchestra was written by Paul Hindemith in 1925, but the best known is probably the one Béla Bartók wrote in 1943 on a commission from the conductor Serge Koussevitzky, who essentially bribed Bartók off his deathbed. Bartók, who was suffering from leukemia, was down to 87 pounds and all but bankrupt, but he refused the commission at first on the grounds that he doubted he could deliver the piece. He also knew a handout when he saw one. But Koussevitzky improvised a story that his foundation required him to give Bartók a check for half the amount in advance in order to secure the commission. Bartók accepted the plan and the much-needed check and managed to write the entire piece at a rural mountain getaway in upstate New York during the summer and early fall of that year. Bartók himself provided this commentary on the piece. The general mood of the work represents, apart from the jesting second movement, a gradual transition from the sternness of the first movement and the lugubrious death song of the third to the life assertion of the last one. End quote. The concerto for orchestra begins with a slow introduction. Anchored by unison strings, with occasional interjections from the winds. The discussion grows into a tense argument between the two sections. Finally, as the tempo picks up, everyone seems to be working together, but grudgingly. And when the movement proper finally begins, it's in a tough sort of good humor, as if that argument was resolved over several glasses of Hungarian beer. Solo woodwinds take the spotlight first. Followed by the brass section. The movement maintains a tense push-pull throughout. Until the opening theme returns and the brass resolve everything with a grand flourish. The second movement is titled Gioco delle Coppie, meaning Game of Couples, and this first intermezzo features various instrumental couples passing the ball around. First the bassoons, then oboes. Clarinets. Flutes. And trumpets. Bartók enigmatically insisted that thematically the five sections have nothing in common, though rhythmically they certainly do. A spacious chorale for the brasses with side drum provides contrast before the pairs return to bring the game full circle. Bartók was the master of what has come to be called night music, and his third movement, Elegy, is a particularly unsettling example. Here he shows the same gift for creepiness that helped get his ballet The Miraculous Mandarin banned from the stage 20 years earlier. The strings begin a death wail. Eventually, everyone joins the lament, which dies away in swirling mists of strings and winds. The oboe takes pride of place in what Bartók called the interrupted intermezzo. After the oboe melody comes a section for lushly scored strings. If Bartók had written for the movies, it might have sounded like this. The oboe restates its theme, and then comes the interruption. It's actually a quotation from Shostakovich's Seventh Symphony, which was hugely popular in the United States just then. It was practically a war anthem in both the U.S. and its then ally, the USSR. Bartók, who didn't much care for Shostakovich's music anyway, grew increasingly annoyed at the success of the Seventh Symphony, and he makes this quotation sound as rude and vulgar as he can. He commented, "The melody goes on its own way when it's suddenly interrupted by a brutal band music, which is derided, ridiculed by the orchestra. After the band has gone away, the melody resumes its waltz, only a little bit more sadly than before." End quote. What Bartók didn't realize was that the tune was not actually by Shostakovich. He himself had swiped it from Franz Lehár's operetta, The Merry Widow. The finale is a perpetual motion machine, a whirlwind of energy that one wouldn't expect from a composer on the brink of death. Bartok shows off all his skill as a technician, working an intellectual fugue into the proceedings. And after a brief respite from the perpetual motion, he brings things to a brilliant conclusion. Koussevitzky and the Boston Symphony premiered the new piece a little more than a year after it was completed. Against his doctor's advice, Bartok attended the concert. The enthusiastic cheering would prove the highlight of his career. Working on the Concerto for Orchestra seemed to give Bartok a new lease on life. In the year before he died, he managed to finish his Sonata for Solo Violin and most of his Piano Concerto No. 3 and Viola Concerto, as well as revising the end of the Concerto for Orchestra, bringing this masterpiece into its final form. It is ironic that Koussevitzky should have been the instigator of this work, since he had not been a particular fan of Bartok's music. But the new work converted him completely. Bartok reported, "It was worth the while. The performance was excellent." Koussevitzky is very enthusiastic about the piece and says it is the best orchestra piece of the last 25 years, including the works of his idol Shostakovich. End quote. What Koussevitzky got for his money was a splendid showpiece for his orchestra, one that has energized musicians and audience members at every performance since. What Bartok got was the last laugh. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.